we constantly should be trying to get better as human beings, right? Constant improvement. But with ADHD, it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with her. I'm using air quotes in case you're listening to this. This is something that she has that can be a positive thing in many, many ways. It makes her unique. And so it was going down that path of being able to understand then for her to be the best version of herself that she can be, and me to be a parent that's supportive and helpful and understanding of how she processes information, how she does things. And then along that path, it was you and her both looking at me and saying, oh, you're probably ADHD too. And I'm like, what?
Welcome to Successful with ADHD. I'm Brooke Schnittman. Let's get started. Welcome to Successful with ADHD.
Hey, Brooke. Good to be on here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And for all of the listeners out there, this is a very special guest. Austin happens to be my business coach, and he has helped me level up my business for many years in coaching with Brooke for the past 4 years, I believe, in his company. I am just so grateful for all of his insight and help. And Austin also has suspected ADHD with a child with ADHD. So I am interviewing you today to give us some perspective into what that's all about and what that's like for you, and also to share how you help people like me with ADHD through your business coaching.
Yeah, it's funny when I said, thanks for having me on. I feel like that's just the standard answer you're supposed to give when you're on like a podcast or a radio program. It's just like, thanks for having me. So
exactly. Like we need to come up with a new answer or a new response.
Yeah. I need something new with this, but no,
the pleasure's all mine.
Yeah, exactly. I started answering that way when there's like, we have a question we ask clients. So what are you great at? And I started putting my answer down as everything.
I have no weaknesses.
No, except for the ones that Brooke points out. So.
Who's coaching who here? Okay, that's, continue.
it's hard to believe it's been 4 years like with that. I know you and I were analyzing data from before and how much you've grown and just as a company and as a leader, especially. I think that's been the biggest thing that I've seen from you is just how you've changed as a leader in your organization and how you interact with your team. Funny, I never really knew a whole lot or paid a lot of attention to ADHD until I started working with you. It just wasn't something. And like you, I have an education background. I taught high school, school math for 6 years. And it just was, I taught in the private sector. In the private sector, we just don't have the resources to handle extreme cases. So we don't deal with it a whole lot. And so it wasn't something I paid a lot of attention to until we started working together. And then my oldest is almost 17. Man, I feel old saying that.
You started young.
But she's 17. And I remember, actually, it's funny. We were at a workshop with you, and my oldest didn't know you. And you were across the room, and she looked at me and she said, that lady over there has ADHD. And I said, how do you know that? And she's like, because of this, 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 and this. Like, she knew the markers for it. And I said, how do you know that? And she's like, because I have ADHD. I'm like, since when? Like, you know, and she kind of had self-diagnosed herself. She's a researcher, and you know my daughter. And she had self-diagnosed her and kind of put me on that path of, okay, I need to understand this better as a parent, understand kind of how she processes and how things happen. I've owned a business now for a long time. As a business owner, you're always solving problems. And so when you come home, that often translates to the personal side because you walk in the door having literally all day long solved problems. We talk about that's what management is solving problems.
Right.
And then you walk into your house and you know, you immediately start solving problems and some problems that you're just not equipped to solve, you know, with it.
Or
and
people don't want you to solve it. They just want you to listen, right?
Right. Or as well, it's not a problem that needs to be solved.
Right.
And I think with ADHD, we constantly should be trying to get better as human beings, right? Constant improvement.
Of course.
With ADHD, with her, it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with her. I'm using air quotes in case you're listening to this. This is something that she has that can be a positive thing in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. Makes her unique. And so it was going down that path of being able to understand then for her to be the best version of herself that she can be, and me to be a parent that's supportive and helpful and understanding of how she processes information, how she does things. And then along that path, it was you and her both looking at me and saying, oh, you're probably ADHD too. And I'm like, what? And then looking at it, and it began to explain a lot of things in my life that I do. And it catches me now. And I'm not near up to speed on the different spectrums like you would be, Brooke.
Sure.
Of understanding that there were certain things in my life that I do that it's like, okay, this is why I'm doing that. And I very much, you know, you and I talked about behavioral assessments. I definitely look at those things as they're not crutches, right? This is not mm-hmm. a crutch. It's not an excuse. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that I then can take and say, okay, how can I be better with this? Like, how can this make me better? And how can I, you know, not use it as a crutch? Not when I start, that starts to happen. What tools, what things can I do to, you know, not fall into that trap? That makes sense. For example, like, I'm not a very social person. So that's not an excuse to not talk to people. It's funny, my kids have been with mm-hmm. me lately, and I'm talking to everybody in public. And my kids are like, why do you keep talking to everybody? And I'm like, because I'm trying to break out of my box.
I'm trying to be social.
I'm not. You know, or like I went hiking in Colorado this last weekend, and I didn't make a plan. I'd always plan everything out. And I was talking to mm-hmm. Gary, and he's like, you know, what are you doing? I'm like, I have no idea. He's like, what do you mean you have no idea? You always have a plan. I'm like, no, I'm trying to develop that side
be
of me
spontaneous.
Of not over plan things and be spontaneous. And yes. So with ADHD and myself and my daughter, it's about understanding it in a way that we can look at the positive sides of it and the strengths behind it and say, how can mm-hmm. she utilize that? And how can I utilize that better? And at the flip mm-hmm. side of things, how can we, the things that we slide into, make sure that we're self-aware of those things and not allowing us to put us where we don't want to be? And so that's been kind of my journey of ADHD and interact with my daughter on that, learning yeah. about myself and the different aspects of that.
But you know what's so interesting too is that typically parents realize they have ADHD when their children are diagnosed. It's very hereditary. But in this case, it was Jaylen who told you that you have ADHD. Yes. It's like she's a magnet for that.
Yeah, it's funny. She notices it right away with it. I think the ADHD though is what I'm very attracted to, entrepreneurship and business ownership. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I do a lot with behavioral assessments and predictive index mm-hmm. and things like that. I'm a certified coach with them and do a lot with that.
You've helped me so much with that.
Yeah. People ask me in PI, like, what's the marker for a business owner? And there's certain ones that kind of tend to be more that way, but mine is the opposite of it. Like my mm-hmm. behavioral assessment doesn't explain the entrepreneur business side of me.
35% of business owners have ADHD, but I think it's definitely more than that. People just don't yeah. know that they have it.
I feel in some ways that might be the X factor for it. Like for entrepreneurship, that might be the X factor that we almost don't know as to what attracts yeah. some people into it. And so, again, and this, there is nothing scientific about what I'm saying right now, just so you know. I just have wondered that as I've looked at some of my behaviors with ADHD and that contradict my what motivates me of that. For example, mm-hmm. I am very mm-hmm. risk averse. I do not like risk at all, but yet I'll come over to business and there are things that I'll do in business that are
very risky,
riskier of starting businesses and doing things like that that don't fit the other side of things.
Right.
It's been interesting of looking at that.
And I wonder if like the planning piece that you like to have and the risk aversion has to do, and again, I'm not a therapist, but has to do with some of the anxiety surrounding it too, where you over plan so you don't mess up, or you need to make sure that there is very little risk so you feel like you're in control. Just a thought.
I would definitely agree for me that that's what happens as well. Is I need to have a plan. It's also very much like a FOMA,
fear of missing out.
Yeah, I'm going to Japan, taking my son to Japan at the end of the month. And it's like, I want to plan the entire thing out minute by minute, because if I don't, then I might not be able to do this because I didn't plan for it.
Right.
For example, we took my oldest to Paris and went to the Eiffel Tower. You know, and it's like, if you don't have reservations to get into the Eiffel Tower, you may not get into it. So my mind is like, we can't just show up at this thing. We've got to, you know, plan ahead and buy the tickets and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then when that plan goes awry, I've had to work really hard at it not throwing me off of being able to do it. Mm-hmm. And again, I definitely would consider myself a very good problem solver. I will figure it out, mm-hmm. but it'll take me a minute. Right out of the gate, I'll just be like, everybody just stop. Just stop, you know, like that. And I'll figure it out.
Yeah. You see problems before they become problems. And I know that a lot of individuals with ADHD can see an issue before it becomes an issue. And it's just hard to explain it, but you're very good at seeing the whole picture and zoning in on what piece needs to be addressed first.
I often joke around with, I'm not sure who's coaching who. If I'm coaching you, you're coaching me, but you pointed it out to me. I will jump around a lot. I will shift gears mm-hmm. from one to the other.
Right. We have an hour long meeting and 30 minutes is us just, you know, yeah. shooting the, you know what.
Right. And so I've become even more structured of my day. What I've added to it is a lot of time blocking. Mm. And what the time blocking has done for me is that even if what I plan during that time block doesn't happen, I will just put something else in that time block. So it gives me enough structure that, like yesterday, for example, I had a couple of calls with clients that ended up getting moved, like postponed or canceled, but I had it time blocked. So I just took something else from my list and plugged it into that time block, as opposed to before.
Yes.
I would almost like wander around for a little while, like almost have a hard time.
What do I do?
Getting, right. What I'm going to do right now. So now I do a lot of time blocking with a task list. And then I'll just move tasks into those spots, you know, that open up, as opposed to all of a sudden. So what's become really important for me is the night before, like I have a yellow notepad on my desk. I'm going to receive it right now, but that I literally will like put the times at each, I'll time block uh-huh. out like 30 minutes and then I'll put everything on there for me. Mm-hmm. And then I'll create a task list, because otherwise I will, you know, I'll jump all over the place, wandering around the house, not getting anything done.
It's funny, before this call, so I usually do that on Mondays or Sunday nights, and I didn't do it yesterday. So before this call, I was like, what do I have to do? Like, what's happening? I felt so anxious. So immediately, now it takes me like 2 minutes. Sorry for those of you listening, but it will take you less time over time. And I do the same thing. I'm like, oh, everything is right in front of me. Same to your point. If I miss something, that's okay, because I see some blocks that are open in the rest of my days. And it also helps being proactive. If you make a conflict in your schedule, looking out at your week and saying, ooh, I need to shift this around.
Yeah. Now, what I've done at the house with my kids, my daughter in particular, is I've tried to create a lot of consistency at the house, like things that they know.
Yeah, that's great.
For example, Friday nights at our house, and you know me, I'm a big Disney fan. Friday nights is classic Disney movie night. And what I've noticed with her is like, and just things like that, that we just, I always do on these nights. And it seems to help her and give her like some stability that she knows those things are happening on those nights. Now, at the same yes. time, I've tried to add, because I struggle with it, some flexibility that if something does come up, in particular with like, that's where I'm going to be doing, and that's where I'm planning on that. Mm-hmm. And then, but if she has something come up, then it's not that big of a deal. It's okay if she needs to divert the plan. Now, generally, she doesn't. She seems to need that kind of structure.
Yeah, consistency is super important as far as knowing what to expect. Transitions are very difficult for individuals with ADHD. And I think that's helpful with Jaylin on Fridays to have that routine. And even with my kids, if something is changing, to give them that notice beforehand so they're not surprised when it happens. Of course, we can't control every surprise that comes up, but having that schedule out in front of them so they know what to expect is huge.
Yeah, I've noticed with her that it's not so much about when there is a change, it's not so much why the change happens as knowing what the change is what she seems to like. I used to try to explain to her why I was changing something, why we were having hamburgers instead of tacos. And it wasn't so much about the why, it was about the what. As long as she seems to know what things are, then the why is not as important to her. It's just what what it is. She almost like doesn't even seem to care.
Okay.
If you'll let me, I'll turn the conversation a little bit though to you as to what can you tell me things that I should be doing with her.
Ooh, this doesn't typically happen when I'm interviewing someone, and I'm happy to share. So every child with ADHD is different, right? So Jaylin, she likes the what, but she doesn't care about the why. A lot of us with ADHD do care about the why. So she is unique in some aspect there. But I think you're doing a great job. And just being able to ask questions and listen from a place of curiosity, because ADHD or not, everyone is different. And as long as their needs are being met emotionally, you know, physiologically, psychologically, they're going to feel safe and they're going to feel connected. So just showing her love and empathy. And if you're not sure about something, asking for clarification and knowing that your journey is going to be different than hers. And she's taken a different journey than you so far and has proven to be different in that sense, you know? So just being open-minded.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and that took me a little bit of getting used to. I'm not a real touchy-feeling person, but there are times where she wants to be very close to me, and then there are times where it's, don't touch me. And I think it's her own self-awareness. She's gotten very good at communicating that to me. And initially out of the gate, you know, it's you want to walk up and just, you know, put your arm around your daughter, give her a hug, you know, things like that, you know. Kiss on the cheek, things like that. And initially, I was like borderline offended. And at the same time, I was like, okay, stop. But she doesn't want to be touched. It's okay. And like, but just, I'm being like vulnerable here. Like, it's,
right.
It's like, well, why are you being that way with me? Like, I'm your dad, you know?
Right. It has nothing to do with you.
Right. I had to realize that there were times that it was, she'll, and then there's times where she will just walk up to me out of nowhere and just give me a hug or want to just stand close to me. And it's been interesting because it's not been predictable. There's been instances where I would have thought that she, like, for example, in a busy, noisy type place where maybe she'd want to be near me, and she doesn't want to be. She wants to be by herself.
Yeah, she's overstimulated with those types of places, and she needs some place by herself to calm down and get herself together.
But then there's other times where it's almost the same scenario where she literally wants, like, she'll want to stand like right behind me, like where she just can look at my back and where she wants to be like touching me and close to me. So it's been something for me of being open to what does she need in that moment, because it's not easy for me to predict or to know. I sometimes think she does and then think she doesn't. And she and I have had to learn, you know, like, props to her, because she's done a fantastic job of getting to the point of verbally saying, Dad, don't touch me right now. You know, and me being receptive of that and saying, okay, no problem, whatever you need. But at the same time, she's able to come up and say, hey, I need you to hold me right now. I need you to hold my hand. Aww. She's a very affectionate child. Like, she's been very good at vocalizing what she needs in those moments. And I don't like pat myself on the back, because it's been a journey of getting there for me, but of being really open and receptive to paying attention to what she needs in that moment and then adjusting, you know, to that as well.
Isn't that a relationship in general? We're never going to be able to predict people's minds. And intimacy for ADHD is really challenging, because sometimes we just don't want to be touched. Sensory issues, emotional, hormones, overstimulation, understimulation. And sometimes we do want that intimacy and that connection. So I think you're doing a fantastic job in that sense. And nothing is going to be perfect. And when you think you figured her out, well, guess what? She's changed again. You've been doing a fantastic job, and none of your children are alike. right? You have four children. Is that correct?
That's the fun part of being a parent is it's you would think that they'll all be similar in some ways to each other, and they are all so completely different. You know, one of the challenges, and this is probably off topic of ADHD, but, you know, of parenting, I find it's just being able to give each of them individual time. I text my 12-year-old the other day. I said, hey, you and I haven't really spent a lot of time, you know, just one-on-one. I said, I'll be home, you know, Thursday. I said, let's go out Thursday night and go do something you want to do. She likes to shop. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, I'm offering to take her to like a high-end department store. And she's like, I want to go to Old Navy. I'm like, okay.
Oh, it's comfortable and inexpensive. So how would you say you transition then from being a business owner and CEO and COO, depending on the business you're in?
Yeah.
Being super organized and planned there and then coming home and trying to figure things out.
You know, it's funny because I can tell you exactly what it is. I walk in the door and when the kids, I share custody with my ex-wife with the kids. So there's that addition to it as well of kind of just now navigating all of that. It's funny because what I do is I just look at myself and I say, breathe. Like, it's just something will happen.
It's all you can do.
To your point, I'm in Dallas, Texas right now, based out of the Chicago area. And I travel every week working with businesses. And I'm here for a day where we're digging into the business and putting in structure and KPIs and analyzing the people in the company, who's the right people in the right seats, and solving problems in the business, like big problems are going on right now, strategic meetings. And then I step foot into the door with, you know, 16, 13, 12, and 8, right? And it's a completely different world when I walk in the front door of my house than what I just got off the plane from. And something will happen. And again, because I'm also like a very structured person and live like that, when things don't go on plan, I can feel it in me of like almost the anxiety, agitation bubbling up. And I'm literally like, just breathe, just stop and breathe, you know, like that.
Good for you.
And I have that room in there now that's kind of quiet, my living room. And I just like, we'll sit down there for a minute and just like breathe. It doesn't take long. I'm like, or something will happen. I'm like, just calm down, breathe. It'll be okay. And just give it a minute. It's that, you know, count to 10, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Well, so you have a space that you go to that helps you decompress and calm your nervous system.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can fully attend to your kids because you have a very stressful day solving problems, right? So how much energy do you really have left at the end of the day doing all of these problem solving and putting out fires, then transitioning to home where you have to either solve problems or not solve problems, but be flexible and open?
That's the biggest struggle for me, is not solving the problem. As a parent, there's that side of you that wants to solve all your problems for your kids and then they have the easiest path possible and then not to struggle, even though that's what they need, because we all struggle. Like, they get to be the people they need to get to. They need to have those struggles. And two, being a business owner, just period, as a business owner, and the calls from your team are to solve a problem. I mean, usually your team's calling you because they need you to solve a problem, not just because they don't need anything. So you're solving problems at work, you know, as a business owner. The job side of me that I have in the consulting company is solving problems that I do literally all day, every day. That's all I do. And then it's walking in with the kids, and it's that, or into the, or just home life in general, of that transitioning from solving problems constantly, every phone call all day, to they're not necessarily looking for me to solve this problem, or not solving the problem for them because they need to solve it themselves, but just being there.
Yeah, they need to use their own executive functions.
It is a very hard transition as a parent, business owner. I mean, all of them are hard, of to saying, let me not solve this problem. Let me let them do it.
Don't bring your work home.
Yeah, it's okay that they struggle. It's okay they fail a little bit, you know, things like that, you know, and that's part of the process.
Yes, not everyone needs a trophy. It's okay to fail.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what I think is so wonderful about bringing it back to the business for a second, the weekly check-ins that we do on Fridays to go over our numbers, just for anyone listening out there, so many people since you and I have started to work together, and Sharper has, hopefully you don't take all of my ADHD coaches out there in the universe, but you probably will because they'll want to work with you after this call. But so many ADHD coaches and companies have come to me. How did you do it? Like, what do you look at? So Friday meetings, looking at the right numbers, making sure everyone's in the right seat, delegating correctly, but having that accountability from you is huge. Because if you and I didn't have that meeting scheduled on Fridays, I probably would never look at the numbers. And that issue that you and I were dealing with Google, you know, not having accessibility on Google and the lead flow being down, I would have probably not realized what that was had we not kept a close look. And as ADHDers, we usually see big picture. We don't stay as focused on the numbers and the mundane stuff. It might not be as exciting to us, especially if there's no reward and no thrill in it. So I think it's so helpful, not only the tools that you give, but having a second set of eyes, but also having that accountability weekly.
Yeah. Business owners as a whole, we often, because we're so entrenched in our business and doing the work of it, that we rarely stop to look at those things. We're making reactive decisions to what happened in the day, or because we don't have time, we're not seeing a problem and then really stopping and identifying and solving that. Let me back up. We're solving the problem, but it's usually not the right solution because we didn't take enough time to identify what the problem was.
Sure. So it's more reactive based on quick feelings.
Like, for example, and I don't know what the solution would have been that we're talking about, but it made us stop and ask other questions besides just like throw more money at it. And then we were able to quickly find out what the problem really was and solve the problem. But there's all kinds of things going on in business financially. I mean, you've got multiple departments. You've got sales, you've got marketing, you've got finance department, you have an operations department. There's so much going on that if you don't have measurables in place, if you don't have, and I say this, managers, when you're managing a business, not working in it, when you're managing it, you're auditing, you're training, and you're solving problems are the three things that you're doing. And if you find that you're not doing, the stuff you're doing doesn't fall into one of those three buckets, you're not running a company, you're doing a job.
You're a contractor.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And exactly. So with us, it was, you know, it's those weekly meetings, those weekly check-ins are about, you know, I mean, we just added, you know, some of your team members to that meeting. Why? To increase communication, you know, because we're having those meetings, we're stopping. What I find often with businesses is that a problem comes up and we go knock on their door or their office, or we call them out of nowhere. Well, as soon as you do that with somebody, they're immediately on the defensive.
Defense, like, right.
Call them and you say, hey, there's a problem. You didn't do this. They immediately are going to defend themselves. Well, I did do this. This is why I didn't do it here. And they often, people feel attacked at that point. Like, you call me out of nowhere and it's an attack. But when you put an organized meeting in place that's structured, that's at the same day, the same time, there's an agenda to it. And back to what we're kind of talking about now is there's an expectation as to what's going to happen and when it's going to happen.
It's so much better.
We came to this meeting to discuss this point. All we were going to talk about this today because we didn't hit the goal this week. And it changes the whole conversation from everybody being defensive to what's the solution and what's the action item that we're now doing to move forward and to move the company forward.
Yeah, working together as a team. And as an ADHDer, you know, I hated when bosses would do that to me. They would just throw something on unexpectedly. And I know sometimes I slip. And if there's a real emergency, of course, I'm going to bring in a team member and say, what's going on?
Right.
But for the non-emergency things, if I throw something at my assistant or my salesperson or marketing or a coach, they're going to be out of whack a little bit. So it's helpful to keep that relationship good. And in the neurodivergent space, also to know what to expect, coming back to Jaylin, like knowing there's a routine and you're going to discuss that together. And it's helpful for me too, because then I'm accountable to that department. So I know that I'm checking in with them also to go through those stuff.
Yeah. Probably the number one feedback I get from team members on a team, not the leaders or the owners, but the team is, I don't know what the vision is. I don't know where we're going as a company, and I don't know what's expected out of me are the two, probably the two biggest things. And so we can eliminate those of showing them what the vision is, where we're going as a company, and then what the expectation is, which again kind of goes back to the process. Like, do you have a process mm-hmm. so they know this is how it's supposed to be done? And second, what is the measurable? Like, how many are they supposed to do? How fast are they supposed to do it? Like with your company, one of the things we started measuring early on was percentage of our active clients that were being seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that we talked about that. It was kind of low.
It was.
And we said, well, what are we going to do about it? And what we decided first to do was just to alert all the coaches as to what the expectation was. And each week, let them know where they came in at. And if you remember back, that was a couple of years ago, we never did anything after that. It literally fixed itself once we said,
it does.
Here's the expectation, and here's every week the measurement. And once they knew that, they fixed it themselves. They just didn't know what the expectation
that was. Amazing.
Was. And again, we never had to really deal with it. I don't think we've gone 2 weeks of falling below that goal without us knowing why it had gone. You know, there are things that happened that were why, but you know, we always knew why. They just automatically fixed it themselves because they knew what the expectation was then.
Absolutely. And they know that there's that accountability piece, but no micromanaging that needs to happen in between.
Yeah.
So I think that we really hit the nail on the head here. It's that no two people are alike, and you have to meet people where they are and ask them what they need in the moment. And that's any relationship, whether it be with your daughter, whether it be with a significant other, whether it be a friend. We can't read people. They have to be able to communicate that to us. And also just having that accountability and that second set of eyes, being able to talk through things, have accountability, and to have a mentor who can help you through these things. And I'm just going to say for all of those of you listening, that first year that I wasn't working with Sharper, I remember I met Gabe, my husband, and he was like, how are you tracking your leads and your clients? I'm like, huh? What are you talking about? He goes, look at all this. Like, I had written pieces of paper and I would put it into a filing cabinet. So we just went through and made a list on a legal pad. And there were like hundreds of people. He goes, what are you doing with all this information? I'm like, nothing. And that's where the bell went off. And I was like, oh, in order to expand and grow this business, I'm going to need processes and procedures and plans. And I need that also to have my employees and contractors build trust. So,
yeah, exactly.
Austin, for those people who are listening and want to reach out for your fabulous business services, share with them what you can provide and where they can find you.
Yeah. Yeah. Our website's sharperprocess.com. You can always email me at austin@sharperprocess.com as well. Of course, I'm on Facebook, and we have Sharper Business Solutions are on all the social media platforms too. So what we offer is business consulting, coaching services to build structure, systems, processes, and a lot of things in that vein there. We are helping to analyze your team. We use behavioral assessments, predictive index to get people in the right seats. Yeah, we build out Trainual to give you training materials for your team coming in, but in particular, the structure, the processes, KPIs to kind of help you grow your business from there. I like to tell small business owners, it's about getting from being a job to being a business.
I think that's huge. And I appreciate you coming on today and sharing your wealth of knowledge. And to anyone listening, I promise you, Austin and his team will definitely up-level your business if you are working in your business harder than you feel is necessary. And you might not even realize that you're working so hard until you see how many seats you're actually sitting in. But if you're exhausted at the end of the day, it might be time to take a look at your business and see if it's healthy and if you need someone like Austin to come on. So we'll put your notes and your links in the show notes.
Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Austin.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Successful with ADHD. I hope it helped you on your journey. And if you need any additional support for you or a loved one with ADHD, feel free to reach out to us at coachingwithbrooke.com and all social media platforms at Coaching with Brooke. And remember, it's Brooke with an E. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.